You're listening to Pop Culture Detective Audio Files. In each episode, we investigate the social and political messages embedded in popular media. I'm your host, Jonathan McIntosh, and today we'll be discussing the mind-bending multiverse movie...
What's happening?
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Everyone, I'm not your husband. I'm another version of him from another universe. I'm here because we need your help.
Very busy today. No time to help you.
This movie was created by the directing duo known as Daniels, consisting of Daniel Kwan and Daniel Shiner. The film stars legendary actress Michelle Yeoh as Evelyn, an immigrant struggling to run a failing laundromat and navigate an IRS audit. Ki Kwan plays her put-upon husband Waymond, and Stephanie Hsu plays their unhappy daughter Joy. Now, this is a multiverse movie that mashes up elements of science fiction and superhero movies, action films, and Hong Kong cinema. And if that wasn't enough, the movie also manages to subvert many of these sort of underlying messages that are almost ever present in those other genres. So here to discuss Everything Everywhere All at Once, we're joined by friends of the show, Felicia Lopez and Carl Williams. Felicia is an assistant professor at the University of California, Merced, in the departments of Literatures, Languages, and Cultures, where she teaches classes on Latinx, Chicanx, and Indigenous representation. Welcome back, Felicia.
Nice to be here.
Carl is an assistant professor of clinical law at Cornell Law School. He teaches and supervises students working on legal projects and cases supporting struggles for racial justice, sovereignty, and liberation. Good to have you here, Carl.
It's going to be fun.
Now, originally, we had planned to do a sort of multiverse episode, basically comparing Everything Everywhere All at Once with the new Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. But after seeing this one, I went back to the theater, and instead of watching Doctor Strange, I just watched this one again. You know, I haven't seen Doctor Strange yet, so we're obviously not going to be comparing the two, but I can't imagine that it's better or more interesting or more emotionally impactful than Everything Everywhere All at Once, because this movie got me in a way that it's been a really long time since I was hit, you know, emotionally, psychologically. I should interject really quickly that, you know, normally when we do these podcasts, I make a point of saying, if you haven't seen this movie or TV show, don't worry about it. You know, you can get something out of the podcast anyway. I am not saying that this time.
Go watch the movie.
Yeah,
go watch it.
If you haven't seen it.
Stop this right now.
Yeah, turn it off. Come back later, you know. But yeah, it's a couple times. It's an incredible experience, and you should go into the movie knowing as little as possible.
It is, yeah. I think it's an experience that you know, go with your weird friends. The movie is, when people ask me like, what is it about? I'm like, it's completely preposterous.
Yeah, I mean, don't even try to explain it. You know, I normally don't like rewatching movies over and over again, but in this one, you know, I've already seen it 3 times. And I feel like each time I'm getting something new. I mean, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot to discuss. I kind of just wanted to get your initial impressions. I mean, you went into the theater, you sat down, and what happened?
For me, this movie hit all of the right emotions. And it's like my sweet spot genre, which is joyful but melancholy. And that's my favorite kind of music. It's my favorite kind of any kind of art. I enjoy that happy, melancholy feeling, and this was an emotional roller coaster, but in a really wonderful way. And so I was genuinely surprised that I walked out of the movie theater, and I've also seen it a couple of times now, I have to admit. I walked out of the movie theater and I still had tears streaming down my face, but I was happy. Exceptionally happy. And so for me, that's a rare thing. Usually when I'm crying, it's because it's a sad movie. But in this case, it brought me genuine joy, which I, you know, especially during these times in the COVID age that we're living in, that's extraordinarily rare. And so this was, for me, just a beautiful experience.
This was the first movie that I saw in the theater since before the pandemic started.
So this was the first movie I've seen in a theater since whatever, 2 years and something, which that certainly had, I think, a lot of impact on my response to the movie. It just made it better.
Yeah.
The thing that I really enjoy about the movie, I think initially, is that it's sort of like if you didn't have a rule book to make a movie and someone said, we're just going to make this the way the hell we want to make it. It doesn't have to fit into something. It doesn't have to match some set of keywords on Netflix. And that I really appreciated because, as folks who've seen it will know, it gave him the ability to go absolutely anywhere.
Across the multiverse, I've seen thousands of Evelyns. You can access all their memories, their emotions, even their skills. There's a great evil spreading throughout the many verses. And you may be your only chance of stopping it.
The thing that about all art, which is critically important to me. And
this is a big statement coming. This is huge.
And mostly about movies is I need to leave the theater and say, I know something that I didn't know before. I can interact with the world in a way that I couldn't interact before, or I can absorb information. It's going to change. It changes me, right? It changes the people who watch the thing. Like, otherwise, why the fuck did you do it, right? And that can be, it made me happy. It made me sad. It made me, you know, understand a different perspective. And there are a lot of movies that do that, right? And this movie does that in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I also think that, you know, it does all this stuff where the movie is pulling from genre films all over the place. I mean, you've got references to or homages to things like Shaolin Soccer, Kung Fu Hustle, right? So Stephen Chow movies. So if those who haven't seen those, they're bonkers, but they're really fun. And then also Michel Gondry, right? So you've got definitely has some similarities with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And then, you know, there are also shades of like Kurt Vonnegut stories, specifically the science fiction stuff, but just in general, that sort of bizarre, off the wall, you know, almost absurdist storytelling, but all for a political subversive point. Because, you know, while this movie is fun, it also has some very subversive messages, I think, around masculinity, around violence, around conflict. I think there's a lot of layers here, you know, just beyond the layers of the sort of filmmaking stuff going on.
I feel like it offered something for everyone, that there was some movie that it was going to reference that you were going to get. There were references to Indiana Jones, right? Callback to Short Round and what he would say in the movie. The reference, of course, to Ratatouille with Macaroni. And not just that. I don't know if anyone noticed this, but the voice of the raccoon was Randy Newman of Toy Story fame, right? Well, Randy Newman is known for a lot of different things, but he does the voice of the raccoon. And so, of course, it's really playing off of on these Disney movies as well.
Yeah, I mean, and then you've got The Matrix. I mean, there's scenes that are...
Oh, definitely.
That are just... I mean, almost pulled directly from The Matrix, and then twisted. You're right.
I have to say, my favorite one is which I've never seen this. I don't know if this is done anywhere in any movie. Evelyn, Michelle Yeoh's character in the movie, is, without going into a lot of the plot of spoilers of the movie, is watching a person who is basically Michelle Yeoh.
Right. Now, who is Michelle Yeoh?
Is Michelle Yeoh, right. Is the human being outside of, so it's this third wall breakdown of the character watching the actress actually on a screen. And I was watching it and I'm like, this is the most meta thing.
Can I break for a moment? Because I feel like there needs to be a little bit of explanation. I mean, hopefully people are already watching this movie, but it bears mentioning that this way that they're looking at multiverses is very different from the way we usually see it in science fiction or in these Marvel movies or superhero things, where you have just like a separate distant universe where there's another version of you, and it's usually played by a different actor. but there's a different version of you, a different version of your family members, a different version of, you know, reality. But there is like usually like a single version of that other reality. And this is very different in that there are presumably an infinite number of possibilities of things that could happen at any given point in anyone's life, right? And so this is more a multiverse story about what would have happened if I had gone that way instead of the way I chose, right? What would have happened if I hadn't have run away from home and married my sweetheart when I was a teenager. So really, this is exploring all of these different possibilities. And so we have these different versions of Evelyn, and we have these different versions of her husband, Wayman, and different versions of their daughter, Joy. And I think it's really interesting because they're not going to work out the same. And some of them, Joy's not even there, right? They never had a child. And so I just wanted to mention it because I feel like we're going to be talking about these different versions of people, mostly Wayman. You know, we have our Wayman, who is Evelyn's husband, the right. version that we know.
Original.
Original.
Wayman, version one.
Version one. But then we have what's known as Alpha Wayman, right? Because they think they're the best and they're on top. And so Alpha Wayman says that, you know, we made contact with everyone else first. And so we're Alpha. Everyone else is Beta, which I found fascinating. And they just numbered their Betas. and then another reality, which I think is this really wonderful one that we're referencing here, right? Where Evelyn is Michelle Yeoh, right? That is one where they never got together. They didn't marry. They never had their daughter. And then Wayman defied the expectations of his wife and didn't become some poor, sad laundromat owner in the United States, but became a CEO, right? He became a very, very successful businessman.
Sort of business Wayman. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then you also have, within that framework, you have these little jumps. So
small decisions or recent decisions.
Yeah. There's this, even within the context of the movie. So, you know, you've got a branching universe where she decides to go home and finish her taxes. Right. And you've got one where she punches the tax auditor. Right. So even within that, so you sort of have Wayman, original Wayman version one and original Wayman version 1.2 and original Wayman 1.3, right? So you really do see these sort of micro decisions, these little branches as well. And she can jump back into the same sort of similar adjacent timeline that's not quite,
I have to say,
it's not hot dog fingers.
And I want to say this just about the thing that you had just said, Felicia, is I'm going to say this. You might not like it. You might like it. All multiverse movies are rips off time travel movies. I said it. I'm done. Because really, if we go back in time, in all multiverse movies and all time travel movies, all the Marvel movies, they're always trying to go back in a time travel movie or go over in a multiverse movie and fix. They're like, we have to fix it. We have to change that thing. So that
get back on the right path.
Yeah. So right? That we're saved. And this is like, it is not anything about that. Like it's everyone has to, in some sense, all of it has to work out together. And it isn't like there was a single mistake made somewhere.
Yeah. We could talk for hours just sort of about the geeky mechanics of the multiverse and how that works and the really, I have to say, amazing ways that they were able to bring that concept, which is not the easiest thing in the world, right? To visualize in a visual story, a infinitely branching multiverse. Like that's a hard thing to get across.
No, it isn't. You just have to chew on chapstick.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing that they were able to do this movie on such a small budget too. I mean, we could talk about the filmmaking techniques. I mean, really when I saw the trailer, when I first saw this trailer, it was the editing that made me go, wow, I have to see this movie as soon as possible, because they really do a lot of what should be effects work just with hard-cutting editing, like match movement. So, you know, someone will swing in one universe and hit someone in the other universe and things will bounce back and forth, or you'll see light coming from one universe and hitting the person in the other universe, right? It's all practical effects and then edited together really well. And all of it makes it feel like it's a cohesive thing. So, yeah, we could talk about all that stuff forever. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's the messages that this movie is getting across that really matter, right? I mean, this is one of my big complaints about discussions about cinema, especially online, is that they tend to focus on the technical aspects of things and the way that the production is put together, and a lot less emphasis is being put on the messages. So I think we can get maybe get into those messages here, because they are quite subversive and unexpected, starting with the fact that this is an immigrant story.
Right. I definitely appreciate that this is an immigrant story. And I have watched quite a few interviews. I think the most moving for me are the ones with Ke Kwan, who was a child actor. I hope that people, unless they're very young, know what his movies were. Made famous in Goonies and an Indiana Jones movie.
He was also had a little bit part in Encino Man.
Good to know. He was also in a television show, Head of the Class. Yeah, one of the things he talks about is that it was really difficult for him to find jobs, and not just jobs, auditions, right? That there were no roles for young Asian men. And so he decided to move to the other side of the camera. But I think it speaks to the real lack of representation and really the power and beauty behind the recent increase in representation. Of course, there's tons of Asian actors and actresses in Asian films. But in the United States, they are seriously underrepresented, as are a lot of different minority groups. And so I appreciate that we're getting this immigrant story. But it's also so relatable. A lot of Black and Indigenous people of color in this country have very similar experiences as well, right? That they're trying to navigate these systems where there are these systemic disadvantages, there are fewer opportunities, they are having to deal with things like intergenerational trauma. And I think this movie does a really, really wonderful job, especially at the beginning of the film, of showing you how the pain still lingers in these families, the way families treat one another, the way our pain, the pain we experience from often from our own loved ones, our own parents, trickles then down to the way we treat the people around us that we love. And so what I really love about this movie is that it turns these people who I think are often shown stereotypically into people with real feelings, real relationships. And ultimately, they do find a way to break free of continuing that cycle of intergenerational trauma, which I think is huge. I mean, there's a huge lesson there that we can take with us. A lot of people of color can.
This is a movie you could describe many ways, right? One way, if people hadn't seen, I could say, oh, well, it's a movie about an Asian American family that owns a laundromat in the United States. If someone told me that about this movie, I would raise my eyebrow and be like, I don't think I want to see that movie. but, and asterisk Kim's Convenience and all the things people should go look if you don't know.
Turning Red, yeah.
But this, you don't even notice it. It isn't, I mean, you don't notice it as a stereotypical construct, right? It's incidental to the movie, and it isn't, there's no, you know, cheap jokes around it. It isn't essence of who they are. Just they came to the United States and this is what they did.
We have these elements that are kind of stereotypical, but they're played with genuine love.
And nuance too, yeah.
How can I help you?
Yeah, I'm here to pick up some shirts. I called like 3 times.
Okay, give me your ticket. I find for you. Women, customers need you!
Sorry, it was too crowded here, so I moved some upstairs. I think the clothes are happier there.
No more Google Eyes!
I'm actually making a video essay just about Wayman. This character could have gone wrong so easily because our expectations of that kind of character, right? He is
weak,
childlike, introvert,
sensitive,
yeah, sort of silly, a little bit naive. He sort of has this,
and also poor.
Yeah, I mean, he has this sort of like this put upon husband, right? And who is seeking a divorce, whose wife doesn't listen to him.
Also, not terribly competent, right? Misplacing laundry, painting things the wrong color, right?
right. So he's sort of like this bumbling dad character too. All of those traits, all of those characterizations are things that have very specific attachments in terms of audience expectation, right? We've seen these kind of characters before, and we expect certain things from them. And yet—
I think specifically we're looking for them to grow, right? We want them to change, to man up, right?
Right.
Get stronger, right? If they're like a Mr. Mom kind of character, right? They need to work up to the responsibility, right? Take care of business.
Yeah. I mean, the story arcs of this type of character is that they go from what we see them initially, weak and bumbling, and then over the course of the story, they gain confidence. And in a lot of stories, they gain confidence through learning how to dominate others, how to assert themselves in a dominant way, right? Often there's a lot of resentment in there if it's a divorce story or if the wife is treating them badly, right? There's a lot of resentment kind of buried in there, and they have to assert their manhood. In some stories, if it's more action oriented, that's through violence. If it's a comedy sort of thing, it's going to be through learning how to put other people down. That's what we expect in these stories. Like, that's the arc of these characters. I made a little list of movies where we have that kind of arc. So George McFly, right, mm-hmm. is that character in Back to the Future, right? He starts off as just kind of bumbling and awkward and not confident. And at the end of the movie, he gains his confidence and therefore changes his timeline by punching out Biff, right? That's his moment of manhood. And that kind of thing, I mean, Peter Parker, especially in the Sam Raimi movies, right? He's this kind of nerdy, awkward guy. But then as soon as he gets his powers, he gets into that fight in the cafeteria and he punches out the bully. And that's the moment that he suddenly
becomes a man.
Yeah. I mean, that's literal, right? In the story. In the Harry Potter series, you've got Neville Longbottom. The same kind of thing happens in Karate Kid. It happens in District 9. It happens in Evil Dead 2. It happens in the Kingsman series. It happens in, you know, to an extent, it's Neo in The Matrix. Same thing in Transformers, How to Train Your Dragon. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. The Lego movies. The whole concept of alpha and beta male is just total bullshit. So I hope everyone listening knows that. It's all based on these studies about wolves in captivity, but it turns out that wolves in captivity don't behave the same way that wolves do in the wild. And so even the authors of that study are like, oh, we were completely wrong about everything. Disregard it. And yet somehow that alpha beta male thing has become part of our lexicon, the kind of the way we understand masculinity. It's terrible and I hate it, but I feel like we do have to kind of mention that because in this movie, there's alpha Wayman and then presumably beta Wayman. And I've heard the directors, the Daniels, talk about how they kind of wanted to create this beta male, you know, quote unquote character, but then have him be a hero.
Please, can we just stop fighting? I know you're all fighting because you're scared and confused. I'm confused too. Please, be kind. Especially when we don't know what's going on.
They're able to make him and his perspective central to the resolution of the film without giving him a character arc.
Yeah.
I mean,
and successfully, they actually give us a character arc.
Right. And this is the thing that's so amazing about it. Yeah.
It's a magic
trick. It really is an incredible thing to pull off.
Because it only exists in the perception.
Right. So what's incredible is that you have this character who doesn't change, not really, not in any fundamental way, from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie. Wayman is the same guy with the same beliefs and the same worldview at the beginning and at the end. And yet, Evelyn and all the other characters in the movie, they have these incredible arcs. I mean, they really go through the ringer and they come out this amazing journey, totally transformed. And the thing is that the arcs of the story, of all the other characters, and of us as the audience, it all bends around Wayman and his worldview. So it bends sort of back on itself so that, yeah, we go on this journey as the audience. We see him as this sort of pathetic, weak character. And then by the end of the movie, we see him completely differently.
Right. And he even tells us.
He tells us, right?
Like, you see us as you see me as weak.
Right.
Right. Maybe too sweet for my own good. Right. But in fact, it's a strength.
Right. And we come to share that perspective. But that is an incredible thing to pull off. I mean, it's hard to describe how hard it is to do that, because all of these ideas about beta males and empathetic masculinity and, you know, weakness, it's also baked into the culture. That to take the audience perspective and to force that shift to happen over the course of 2 hours is really, my hat is off to the writing there, because it's incredible.
And I think it was beautifully done. And I think it was really wonderful that it was CEO, it was businesswoman who tells us, oh, you see me as weak, but this weakness that you perceive is actually a strength. Because here we see someone who has succeeded, right? He is someone who we can look at and see as a successful man, right? In masculinity standards. And he tells us, I think I might have even been happier just doing laundry and taxes with you.
如果有来生，我还是会选择和你一起包税，开始一点。
Right. And so he's giving credit to our original Wayman, right? He's saying, no, he has it right, right? And he references his other self, of course, unintentionally, according to the movie. But for us, it feels very poignant, right? He's talking to us about original Wayman.
I actually hadn't made this connection before, but when you said that about CEO Wayman, CEO Wayman is supposed to be this sort of success by capitalist, standards, but he is depressed and sad, and he, as you said, no one likes that. Right. He just wishes, like, he's like, I would have rather been poor and done taxes with you in a failing laundromat than been a super successful capitalist businessman. Like, I thought that was a really nice touch, which I hadn't quite made that connection until you said it. But he does have this great sadness about him. Like, we're not supposed to want to be him.
I'll just put this out there now. When you're making the video, make it clear that you're not writing about Alpha Wayman, because Alpha Wayman is an awful version of Wayman. And I think it's really interesting the way they navigate that as well, because I think the first time I saw it, I didn't realize how awful he was as a character until I saw it the second time. And then I realized, oh no, he's an awful human being. And one of the things that really clued me in is the way he talks to Evelyn. And he says that she's a loser, right? That she is the worst, the version of Evelyn, right? No, that's why you're so successful at this. That's why you can achieve it. And he bolts on her at one point and is like, I know you said
right. He
you're
leaves
a loser.
Her to die. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she's not good enough for him. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And so, of course, these are the supervillains, but they're never really portrayed as the supervillains, right? Because they're kind of inconsequential to the larger villain, which is just the chaotic and depressing nature of all human existence and everything that is.
That's the everything part of it.
Which is also something that makes this movie so beautiful, is that, I feel like we're all in this place. I think a lot of people are saying these are horrible times that we're living through. Everything's chaos.
So you had both said it, but... I'll just say the line, in another life, I would have really liked doing laundry and taxes with you. I just want to get a t-shirt. We can just print t-shirts to say laundry and taxes.
Yeah.
When you were talking, Felicia, about villains, I'm just going to say it as a question. Who's the villain in this movie? Because when I saw the trailer, initially, like...
It's the bagel.
It's in the trailer, or back in the day, it would have been what was on the back of a movie box, but it says... struggle against a villainous IRS auditor. And I'm like, and then I watched the movie. I'm like, wait a minute. I think it's fascinating because is it Alpha Wayman? Is it everything, as you had just said? Is it, there are many ways to look at that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's nihilism and cynicism, really, are the villains. I mean, you could... There are minor villains who don't turn out to necessarily be the villain, right? Because it's at first it's
Jamie Lee Curtis.
It's at first it's Deirdre, the IRS agent, and then it's Jobu Tepaki, and then it's the Alphaverse. It's her father. It's like there's all of these minor villains who it doesn't turn out are actually the core problem.
Yeah, and really, ultimately, none of them are villains, right? I mean, I think this movie does some beautiful things. One of the things I found really surprising about it was that the tax auditor, ultimately, they become presumably friends. They end up bonding. They end up, I think, getting high together. I mean, there's lovers like the, they're lovers. I mean, there's like an interesting storyline that happens there. And so, you know, it's this character who we perceive from the beginning, oh, this is a character who is opposed to our main characters, right? This is someone we shouldn't like. It has us grow in empathy for that character, right? And they do this with all of the bad characters, right? Even the father character, James Hong, who I believe is 93 years old, amazing actor, but he is kind of like a jerk who ultimately at the end we see is trying to save them, right? And that's the alpha version. The alpha version is trying to save them. And we see our original one growing and expanding, right? And becoming more empathetic as well. And so from the lowliest, from the smallest of villains to the bigger ones, right? Even to Jobu Tupaki, we can see that ultimately they're not villains, that everyone, and I think this is a really beautiful message, right? That everyone is just And I think Wayman says this for us at the end, right? We're all just scared, right? We're all just scared and we're confused and we don't know what's going on, right? And so people look for someone or something to blame. Something has got to be our villain, right? And this question that's being asked of this movie, who is the villain? And I think ultimately the answer in our reality, which is, we have these minor villains coming in and out of our lives, but ultimately it's this larger feeling, this existential angst that we all experience of like, why are we here? What is the purpose? Like what is going to give our lives meaning? And how can we make our lives and the lives of people we know and love and the people we don't know and don't love, how can we make those lives better?
In my second viewing, there's a compressed meta movie of Evelyn's life. Watching that for the second time, I was like, the way she's understanding her life, right? And it's the nihilism of her understanding her life is part of the thing that is overcome, right? And so in some sense, that's the foil.
Can we talk a little bit about the Alphaverse? Because I feel like there's a speech where Alpha Wayman is trying to explain what's going on to Evelyn. And he has this speech, and it's delivered very sincerely. And I think you could totally walk away being like, oh, he's totally right. But he's like, our institutions are crumbling. Like, you can feel it. Your clothes don't fit the same way the next day.
Hair never falls right.
Your hair never falls right. You don't know your neighbor, right? And the way
how do we get back to the way things were?
How do we get back?
Very, very conservative talking point.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, the second time I saw it, I was like, wait a second, that's a make the multiverse great again speech. Like that's 100% a Trump like MAGA-verse kind of thing, right? But it was delivered so sincerely that I wonder how many people get that. Because then you start thinking about it in terms of the, you know, when you put that together with the perspective of Gong Gong, right? And
you're talking about Alpha Gong Gong or?
Well, I think Alpha Gong Gong specifically, but this sort of larger symbolism, the underlying idea that part of this movie is about how older generations are resisting change. They're trying to take us back to how things were before, right? It's very reactionary, very regressive in that way, right? And at some point they realize that Evelyn is becoming too powerful and she's not going to help them take things backwards to restore the Alphaverse to its original state, right? Before things changed and transformed. And so then they decide, well, we're going to kill her because she's no longer helping us with our plan. The symbolism of that, especially around the acceptance of Joy and her sexuality being a major sort of rift between in the family, it seems like they're trying to say that the Alphaverse is extremely conservative.
I just said, when you said the acceptance of Joy, the double entendre of that confused me. And I cannot also think that was unintentional. Everything in this movie is intentional.
It has to be. Yeah.
Well, like I was saying before, Alpha Wayman sucks. He's the worst. And this moment when he tells Evelyn she's the worst version of Evelyn, I think for me it was really telling, because ultimately I think what I get out of this movie is that she, in fact, is the best version of Evelyn. And it's not because she is a martial arts movie star, and not because she is this wonderful singer, but because she takes those notes. She's willing to change, and she's willing to find common ground with people. And that includes the alphas, right? The alphas are awful. But ultimately, at the end, her willingness to reach out to them, to be nonviolent with them, to try to find some way of bringing, if I can, bringing joy to everyone, then she brings them around as well.
Yeah, let's talk about that last scene, that last quote-unquote fight scene. You know, this is a movie that is an action movie. The kung fu scenes are beautifully choreographed. I mean, the sound editing is so incredible that, like, I was covering the screen, you know, because of the neck cracks and because it was so visceral. And even though it was the sound that was actually the part that was so disturbing, and putting my hand up to block the screen does not prevent the sound from getting to me. But yeah, so there's a lot of time and effort put into celebrating the kung fu genre. They're celebrating those sort of the violent conflict cinematically. And then at some point towards the end of the film, there's that speech that Wayman gives about how we should be kind to each other and stop fighting. She's in a nihilistic spin.
Yes.
At that point,
she was trying to destroy everything.
She becomes the villain of the piece briefly. Mm-hmm. He gives that speech. If I try to explain it right now to someone who hadn't seen it, it's going to sound like the cheesiest, most naive, sappiest thing you've ever heard, right? People are going to roll their eyes, but I'm telling you, it works.
Oscar worthy.
I started tearing. There were tears, and I typically don't cry at movies all that often. But I, like, all three times I saw this thing, I was like, my face is
it's leaking.
Right.
And it was around that scene. And that's the same sort of sequence, that sort of montage sequence where you've got CEO Wayman talking about how the way he fights is through silliness and empathy, right? It's sort of like presenting his worldview. And that's what ultimately pulls her back from, pulls Evelyn back from the brink, right? Because she's about to dive into the nihilistic, cynical bagel of doom and destroy everything, the whole universe.
All of them.
Yeah. And it's seeing him and the way that he engages with the world. You know, she's sitting in the laundromat. She's just been handcuffed, and he is somehow able to give them like an extra week in their taxes. And he like de-escalates the situation. She gets released. I mean, and Evelyn is totally confused, and she's like, what did you do? And he's like, I don't know. I just talked to her.
Yeah. She was like, it's not possible. And then Joy in the background, where Jobu Tupaki says, it's a statistical inevitability, right? It's bound to happen in some universe, right? But yeah, that he is still trying, right? This is the man, not in this universe, didn't just get stabbed, but in this universe, she just signed the divorce papers on him, right? He may not be married right, soon.
Right. She took a baseball bat with googly eyes on it to their laundromat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she is trying to destroy everything, and he's still saying, we can work this out, right? This is, we can figure it out.
He says, everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And she's like in disbelief, because she's like, what are you talking about? Everything sucks. He says kindness in that speech. He says, we have to be kind to each other. But I think, and that's part of why when I explain it to people who haven't seen the movie, they think it's super cheesy. But I think what he means and what the movie means by the word kindness is not like a kumbaya thing. It's not like this empty, just be nice.
Just ignore the bad parts.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that. It is what he means is we have to be empathetic. We have to communicate. We have to listen. We have to be attentive, right? And that's what we see him doing when he's constantly trying to He's constantly trying to use communication and use attentiveness to de-escalate situations and make them and solve them in that way. Like, he's baking cookies for the IRS agent.
I was just going to say that about him. It almost isn't that he's in some cultures we would say ride or die, right? He's a person who isn't, some people would be transactional about this. And I don't think Waymond in that scene, like the cookies and the googly eyes,
it wasn't a bribe.
yeah. He doesn't say like, I'm going to do this because we'll get a better outcome. He's like, I'm going to do this because I'm fucking Waymond. And that's what I do. Like, I am always there and I'm going to check the noodles because dad doesn't like them too squishy. Because she told me to.
He actually says, take her the cookies. She likes them.
Yeah.
That's what he says. She likes them.
He's a rock. He's a person he's the kind of person that everyone has a person, hopefully, like that in their life. And that's like, that's the person you can always depend on and will do the thing without even knowing the thing that you thought the thing needed to be done.
And amazingly, he is that sort of anchor, that sort of anchor of empathy for the whole film. And yet he isn't the star, right? He's not the one taking action to solve the problem. He's letting his wife and his daughter work that out, right? And I thought that was a really nice thing too, because in a traditional sort of story like this, he would become the central character.
Right, he would be the physical author of them.
Right, but he's not. He's still on the sidelines. And yet his presence is made known because of his influence and in a way he inspires everybody else. And so, you know, that's that fight scene, that final fight scene, quote unquote, on the stairs. I mean, this is an action movie heavily influenced by The Matrix and Kung Fu films and so on and so forth. And we get this sort of trajectory of violence where it's escalating, 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 escalating. And in a traditional movie, at the end, they have a giant fight, right? And that's the crescendo, and that's the thing that solves the problem. But in this is an action movie where violence doesn't solve the issue. Empathy does. Like, that's the conclusion. And the way that they do that in that final fight was so unexpected. And so refreshing.
I loved that. I love that beautiful moment where, you know, they're standing right by the bagel and sucking everything in. And Jobu Tupaki pulls her moves, right? She's takes on this aggressive stance and she's about to come at Evelyn. And Evelyn goes into her kung fu prep, right? And then the pose she goes with is not offensive or defensive pose, but one of embrace.
Yeah, she like opens up her arms and she's like,
right,
making a hug.
Yeah. She's welcoming her in. And it's just such a beautiful juxtaposition. It's like, here's my best move, hug. I think it's so beautifully done. But it really, I mean, I think the reason why they're the main characters is because they're the ones who need to change, right? They're the ones who feel lost. And if Waymond feels that way, we don't know it, right? He's surviving. He's bringing joy to himself as much as he can, bringing others as well. I mean, he's living it well, mm-hmm. right? Things aren't going, I mean, it's not, you know, he's not a rich CEO, but he's living a life that he is happy with. That is how he sees life. And so ultimately, Evelyn and Joy need to see it that way as well.
Right.
And there's this wonderful line, right? And, you know, we're talking about like the violence of it. And I thought about it and really, it's the alphas who are super violent. And the only alpha who seems to not want to be violent, though she is super violent, is Joy, right? Because when she comes to Evelyn, she's like, I'm not trying to kill you. She was never trying to kill Evelyn, not any of the presumably thousands of Evelyns that she killed. She was trying to find someone who she could make a connection with, right? Someone who could experience, someone who would feel what she's feeling because she felt so lost. So alone in her experience of the world. And ultimately, I think Evelyn felt similarly, and they needed to find that same ground, right? That common ground, be on the same page. And it was the same page that Waymond was on.
You know, the other thing I was thinking about is that at the end, at the very end there, in that final scene where Joy and Evelyn are trying to work it out just before they get the hug, you know, she still says, you're fat and you dropped out of college. And like, she still goes through the, she doesn't change her perspective in that way. Like, she isn't like, I accept everything about you and you're great. She says, I still don't like these things. I still don't like that you have a tattoo. I still don't like that you, you know, that you don't eat healthy, that you don't call me, but I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. And I can't, you know, I can literally be anywhere else. I still want to be here with you. Like, you would expect in this kind of movie, like a Disney movie, for her to be like, you're not fat and it's okay, whatever you want to do. And right. But she doesn't do that. She says, I still have all these issues with you, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah. I also like how they trick us at the end, right? At the end, there's this classic line, and I know it because I've been a teenage daughter before. Like, if you love me, just let me go. Let me do my own thing. Let me be independent. Just let me go. And so she says, okay. And she lets her go. And then she, like, 2 seconds later, she turns around and she's like, wait, what am I doing? And so, you know, I think ultimately, I think that is part of this message as well. And I think it really rings true as a woman of color of coming from this very close-knit family where there's this sense like, oh, you need to let me go. Let me be an individual. But don't go so far. wait, come back. We need you. And so it is this really beautiful moment where she lets go, but just for a second, and then says, no, wait, I'm not going to let you go because I love you and I want to be around you as much as I can.
The ending scene that you described a moment ago, Felicia, and the scene towards the beginning of the movie where Joy drives away after she's semi-introduced her girlfriend to her grandfather, and she's pausing and she wants to say something, and Joy is looking at her like, what are you going to say something good to me? And she goes, you look fat. Yeah. And even though she knows what that means, because she's told her partner that, she knows what it means. She just completely falls apart.
My mom's going to kill me, but, and anyone who knows me in person knows that this is a ridiculous thing, but my mom has also told me, oh, you're getting fat. And really, you know, it is such a thing. I mean, I don't know how many, especially women of color I've talked to, where we have this same story, right? And it does come from a place of love, but it also comes from a place of not understanding, not maybe not being aware that other people have feelings, and you have to appreciate that you may be hurting them, which again is something that I feel Wayman is bringing to this narrative, where Evelyn seems kind of oblivious to people's feelings around her, right? Just saying, calling her customer big nose, right? I mean, she's just saying a lot of mean things and not caring about the way people react to it, which is such a flip, right? From the beginning to the end, where rather than being annoyed at the customer who's like, that perfume reminds me of my wife, wanting to engage with these people in a way that's more positive and affirming.
I'm trying to think of another action movie that is heavy on action and celebrating that action cinematically, but then ends up being like, hey, we don't want to fight. And not like at the end of the fight, everyone's all beat up and they decide to not kill each other at the last moment. Not like that. But like the entire final fight scene is going to be about connecting with people, finding out what it is that they're missing in their lives, trying to give that to them. I mean, it's done through, you know, kung fu cinematography, but each time she meets someone on the stairs, she can kind of like use her multiversal power to figure out what it is they're missing and try to give it to them. And then they kind of just collapse and say thank you, you know, as she makes her way past them.
Fight Club would have been a very short movie.
It would have been, yeah, and much, much better.
Something about soap.
Yeah, so I mean, I find that to be really deeply subversive. And then, you know, there's the question, did they celebrate the violence too much in the beginning? Is there a dissonance there? Because they're obviously having a great time filming these fight scenes in the beginning of the movie, and we're supposed to really like it and everything. And at the end, they say, oh, no, let's stop doing this. Typically, when movies try to do this, it kind of feels like they want to have it both ways. But I don't have that same feeling, at least not to that degree here. They really committed to the empathetic, no fighting part in a way that feels meaningful and subversive and kind of gets us to question our own feelings about the beginning of the movie.
I mean, Michelle Yeoh was in one of the top one, two, or three most famous martial arts movies in the last 30 years, right? And the ability they had to make it much, much more had to have been quite tempting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And really flipped it on its head. I mean, much of the, even in the scenes, the fight scenes, they do everything to avoid the, a lot to avoid the traditional, we're standing here punching and kicking and punching and kicking each other for 20 minutes.
Yeah, they are brief.
I still love Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. But
well, in an interview that I saw, the Daniels described the movie like an impossible burger. So it sort of tastes like a fun superhero action blockbuster, but surprise, it's made of vegetables and it's actually good for you. I feel like a lot of what they say sounds super cheesy, but in the context of this movie, 100% works. I'm not sure how they pulled it off, but I think they did. I think this movie is actually good for you emotionally, psychologically.
And it's delightful. Go see the movie.
Yes, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, wait, we're delightful. Not going to talk about googly eyes, rocks, and and fingers.
I love that.
Okay,
oh
do
my
it.
Goodness, no, Go. no. I accidentally almost suggested this as a family film for people, and then I remembered there are giant dildos in it. I'm like, oh wait, hold on, maybe not. So maybe not quite fun for the whole family, but eventually it will be.
I mean, there were moments in this film, several moments where
the butt stuff was a little much.
There were a couple shots there that we maybe didn't need to get the point across. A little over the top. There were several moments in the film where I, you know, put my hand up to cover the screen and looked away. And I'm not kidding. But they were
the
things like
the paper cut scene.
The paper cut scene for sure
was painful.
I was like, oh no, oh I can't watch this, please. And I appreciated that the other characters who were watching it on the monitor were also like, oh my god, I can't watch this. The hot dog fingers in the mouth with the ketchup and mustard. Like I can't, I, it was so revolting. And, you know, again, to their credit, Michelle Yeoh's character
also looks really
looks
disgusting.
Revolted. And then she's like, cause they're
she
watching
puts her hand up to her face
and then she sees the hot dogs and she gets grossed out all over again. And I really like that because that's how I was feeling. I was like, oh my God, I can't.
If you haven't
seen
the movie at this point and this makes no sense, don't worry. It will continue to make no sense.
Right, yeah.
It's a multiverse.
For sure.
I have to say in my real life regularly, I just text people a screenshot of one of the rocks. And people are like, what is this? They go, it's really cute. What on earth is it? Is it smiling? Is it a rock?
It's like a PowerPoint presentation. Right, I mean, there's nothing on the screen. Nothing's happening. It's like a still shot, and there's two rocks and some text on the screen. But actually, it's really powerful. Like,
it's a couple of minutes
gut-wrenching.
Long, and yeah, the first time I saw it in the movie theater, just waterworks the whole time, and I realized there's nothing moving on the screen. there's just subtitles. There's complete silence, and it was just so heart-wrenching.
In my memory of that, the first time I saw it, I thought they were, like, when I recalled it, I recalled them talking. Because I think it's just because it was so like powerful to me, I put the voices in my head. It's also it's cute also, and it's like gut-wrenching and it's
silly, it's absurd.
Absolutely absurd. I mean, it's more absurd than the butt plugs.
It is. Yeah. I think we're about out of time. I mean, I covered a lot. But is there anything else that we may have missed real quick?
I'll just say I'm a bit of a movie snob and I do watch a lot of movies. I also watch bad movies. I've seen all the Fast and Furious movies. I've also seen Torque, which is like
I've never seen
Fast
one.
And Furious on motorcycles.
That's gotta be great.
Oh, it's great. It's
never
it's
even heard of it.
Like it's really, really so bad. It's almost good. Almost good. And a lot of movies that I really, really enjoy, I for a lot of different reasons, like people are like, what's a good movie? You know, and you can't say some, you know, Japanese movie from the 1950s to someone because they're not going to watch it, right? This movie is a movie you can recommend to people. I've recommended it to everyone that I know. I'm like, you should go see this movie. Go see this movie. And they're like, why? And I'm like, just go see this movie because I told you to. Go see the movie. And I think everyone is going to get something out of it. You could just take it for the ride. You could just take the movie for the ride. And, you know, someone described a lot of the Marvel movies as an amusement park ride. You could get on this as an amusement park ride, be like, wow, that was fantastical. It was so silly. It is so great. Or you can watch it and say, what did I learn from that movie? Like, how do I look at things differently? Or it can be that emotional experience and just the emotional experience you get from the movie, right? Because I think it does, it brings joy to the screen in more ways than one. So I think many people can get many things out of it. And I want to find the person that I know that would watch this movie and be like, I didn't really like that movie. I don't understand who that person could be. If you went into this movie with open arms and said, I want to try to enjoy this movie. I can't see how someone's not going to be like, this is a movie like I've never seen before.
If you don't like absurdity, you won't like this.
Those people, what?
There are people who don't like absurdity. That's you.
I hear that.
This is not the movie.
You can't just suspend when once you walk through the darkened theater.
Hot dog fingers. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Hot dog fingers.
Which should not work. It should break immersion so badly that you cannot get back into the movie. And yet somehow.
Not only did I watch this 3 times now, but I have literally recommended it to everyone I know. I really feel like this is such a great movie for people, regardless of political views, though I think it definitely speaks more to people on the left side of issues. But it's this beautiful story that's ultimately, even though it's sci-fi, it's about family, it's a love story to partners and to children and to parents and to grandparents. It is such a hopeful movie that doesn't, like a lot of movies do, it's not an escape from the horrors of reality. It says, yeah, the world is kind of messed up. Things don't make a lot of sense. And we're all looking for connection. But if we act with love, if we treat each other with kindness, then we can find those moments of connection. And sure, we'll often be disappointed, but we have to keep trying. And I think that's the perfect message for us right now at this point in our time as humans in this universe.
So we're going to end the conversation there. Please remember that all of our pop culture detective projects are 100% funded by listeners and viewers like you. So if you enjoy the kind of in-depth media analysis you just heard, please consider going over to Patreon to support our work. Just go to patreon.com/popdetective. As always, you can keep up to date with all of our ongoing projects over on Twitter @popdetective. And you can find our long-form video essays on the Pop Detective YouTube channel. We'll be back again soon with another audiophile investigation. Until then, please remember to follow and subscribe wherever you happen to get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening.